From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ben Brock Johnson, and this is On Point. We are pretty familiar with some of these phrases at this stage in the game. No collusion, the greatest witch hunt in American history, so says President Trump. But amid all the speculation about the Trump campaign's alleged coordination with Russia is the simple fact that a hostile foreign nation did hack the 2016 presidential election with the goal of undermining American democracy, sowing discord, exploiting our greatest weaknesses and deepest insecurities. It feels urgent and current, but in truth, this is part of a Russian effort in motion for decades. This hour, On Point, putting the pieces of Russia's interference in American democracy into a sweeping, staggering story. You can join us on air or online. What should we do in response to Russia hacking our voter databases? Is your state, your voting booth, ready for this year's midterms? What about the next election? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Jeff Pagaz, Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent for CBS News. His new book out today is called Kompromat: How Russia Undermined American Democracy. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Jeff Pagaz, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Ben.
It's really great to have you with us, and I really enjoyed reading your book. Before we chat, I want to play some sound. Last week, President Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, hinted that he may cooperate with federal prosecutors. He spoke with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, who described their conversation.
"My wife, my daughter, and my son have my first loyalty," he said, "and they always will. I put family and country first." Three times I pressed him, and three times his answer was the same: family first. "I will not be a punching bag as part of anyone's defense strategy," he told me. "I am not a villain of this story, and I will not allow others to try to depict me that way."
All right, some more sound now. Speaking to CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, President Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani responded to Michael Cohen's claim that his loyalty lies with his family and country first, not President Trump.
"I don't know what he has to flip over. What I do know is there's no evidence of wrongdoing with President Trump. So we're very comfortable. If he believes it's in his best interest to cooperate, God bless him. He should cooperate. I think the man has been horribly treated by the people he's going to cooperate with. But that, you know, sometimes you have no other choice."
All right, Jeff. So we've got lots to talk about in past history, recent history, but let's stay with the present for the moment. Giuliani giving interviews this week with the suggestion that the White House might refuse an interview on lack of evidence, also saying again that the Mueller investigation is corrupt. Is this a story you're following at all?
Oh, yeah. We're following this story closely because the question is, where does this go next? By all accounts, it sounds like Mueller is getting to a point, the special counsel is getting to a point where he will deliver some sort of report. There have been reports out there that perhaps this could happen before the midterm. So in the next couple of months is the time frame that we're looking at. But also there is this question lingering here, and we've been talking about this for about 7 or 8 months, and that is whether President Trump will sit down for an interview by the special counsel's office or the special counsel himself, Robert Mueller. And over the last 7 or 8 months, the president's attorneys, Giuliani included, have essentially given the special counsel's office the Heisman. They've been pushing back on an interview and trying to narrow down the scope of the questions.
Sure.
The question is, how long will they be able to put that off? And will Mueller wrap up the investigation without an interview with the president of the United States, considering this is his campaign that has been the focus of the Mueller probe to this point, as far as we know? And so, you know, just looking at this as someone who has covered this investigation and others over the last 25 years, it's hard to believe that there won't be questions asked if the special counsel doesn't at some point interview the president. In hindsight, you know, it just looks like this is something that will have to happen one way or another. And the question is, will that lead to a subpoena from the special counsel's office. So to your question, are we watching this? Oh, yeah, we're watching this closely to see how this develops.
Jeff, what about the Michael Cohen part of this? Trump's former lawyer, who now has his own legal counsel, suggesting the president and Giuliani's honesty that they're being dishonest. What is interesting to you about that side of the story right now?
Well, I have been in touch with Michael Cohen over the last year and a half. In the last several weeks, I've talked to people who are close to him. And every time I hear how irritated he has become with some of the statements that the president's allies have made about him, in his view, attacking his credibility. And chief among them is Rudy Giuliani. And so some of the statements that Giuliani has made in the past have angered Michael Cohen. His Giuliani's statements over the last weekend, he seemed to tone down his statements a little bit as they related to Michael Cohen. But I think, based on what I'm learning from my sources, the damage has already been done. Michael Cohen is changing his social media pages, removing references to the president. In those interviews that you pointed out, he talked about his loyalty first to his family and to his country. And this is someone who has considered himself over the years to be
extremely loyal, right?
Extremely loyal to President Trump. President Trump, in my conversations with him, he showered President Trump with praise, no matter what the president did in 2016 and 2017. But in the last couple of months,
sure,
I have sensed this change in his tone and his attitude toward not only the president, but the White House.
Jeff, this is, of course, the very, very, very latest of this story, but it goes back a few years, as your book points out. Can you tell me about the moment you realized that Russian hacking of U.S. elections was going to be a story?
Well, it was this late summer of 2016, and this is really before it was on the public's radar, but I was talking to intelligence sources and federal law enforcement sources, and the signs were there that this was going to be something to pay attention to. As an organization, my justice unit here at CBS News, we were focused on terrorism. But during that summer, there came a point where I decided that we have to start focusing on these Russian intrusions. I had intelligence sources, as I point out in the book Kompromat, who were saying to me at that time that they are hacking us. They are hacking us, and we're not doing anything in response. And so there was alarm in the voices of people that I have trusted over the years as intelligence sources, and they were concerned about how Russian cyber intruders were poking into not only the DNC, but also government websites, political organizations with malicious emails. And so the signs were there that this was building towards something that was an important story for us to cover. And at that time, to cover more than we were, because at the same time, you had a candidate on the campaign trail showering praises on Vladimir Putin.
Right. And you do a pretty amazing job in the book of talking about this kind of crucial time period in the last few months of the presidential campaign. We've got revelations about the Clinton email investigation bumping up against the slow revelation of Russian interference. I was there. We were all there. But it's pretty crazy to read about all this happening at once and to see you put it together.
Well, because at the time, Ben, it felt like I was living in a movie. It seemed like a movie script because in so many ways it seems so far-fetched that this kind of thing would be happening, but it was happening. And so when we started to focus on it, we looked into, obviously, the DNC hack and how far that went back. It actually started in 2015. But we also looked into the response, and this is something that I've talked about in the book. It is fair to say that the Obama administration was slow to respond. In fact, in my book, I talk about how when the DNC emails were released, during the DNC convention, there were people in the White House finding out for the first time that there had been these Russian intrusions, and they were trying to figure out, well, what is the intent here? What are they trying to do? And this was already, as U.S. intelligence officials had had this information already, and they were launching at that time this investigation. And so it was clear that the Obama administration was slow to respond to this. And I talk about that in the book.
Well, you also talk about how in the book, how the Obama administration was also, I think, being cautious, right? Trying not to weigh in at a very, very important time, at least publicly, about, you know, in a way that would sort of sway the campaign and the election one way or the other, besides the stuff that they're normally expected to do, right?
And that's why I call this, it was almost like a perfect storm. In that, you're right, the Obama administration was reluctant to weigh in because they didn't want to see like they were trying to seem like they were trying to influence the election one way or the other. And then, of course, you had President Trump on the campaign trail saying, oh, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. And so that would have been playing into his hands.
Sure.
And so, yes, they were trying to be cautious, not to overreact, not to draw too much attention. But in doing that, the Russian intrusions continued. And became more of an influence in the campaign as these, you know, WikiLeaks, Guccifer 2.0, they started releasing these stolen emails and DNC documents. And so, yeah, the Obama administration pulled back so as not to influence, at least try not to influence the outcome of the election.
Jeff, stay with us. Of course, we're going to be talking more about all of this. We are discussing how Russia hacked the 2016 election. Also, what's on the horizon for the 2018 and 2020 elections. You can join the conversation. Why didn't we see this coming? What are you worried about going forward? Collusion, hacking, something else? I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Didn't you just make that up?
Well, yeah.
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We are talking about Russia's influence and meddling in the 2016 election. You can join the conversation. President Putin claims he had no role in the 2016 election. President Trump says he believes him. Do you buy it? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I am talking with CBS Justice and Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pagaz, who's out with a new book called Kompromat, How Russia Undermined American Democracy. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the history of Russia and the U.S. when it comes to influence. This is something that you talked about in your book that I really had no idea about. I found it really interesting that you point out how long this secret Russian influence efforts or these secret Russian influence efforts have been going on in American politics. And you talk about this happening in the 1960s.
Yeah, it goes back, and I think people forget about that naturally. It seems like that was such a long time ago that we tend to forget about, you know, the Cold War and these battles between the Soviet Union and the United States. And in that time and during that period, of course, there was espionage, and of course, there were efforts by Russian operatives to gather information that could influence decision making. You know, in the book, I talk about dead drops where one person, a spy, is dropping something off in a secret location to be picked up. I talk about invisible ink and how Russian operatives embedded themselves in cities, passing themselves off as ordinary Americans. And
sure,
even during the Reagan years, Russian spies tried to use forgeries and other Cold War methods to spread false information and to influence events. But this is different. What we're seeing now is a new version of an old game. This is cyber espionage. And in a lot of ways, it's easier for them to do because it is harder in so many ways for U.S. intelligence to stop. What happened in 2006, you had thousands of malicious emails sent out by these Russian hackers, and someone, all they had to do was just click on a document and they were in. And they were dormant in these systems until they wanted to come alive and steal, exfiltrate information. And so this is a new version of an old game. And what Russian operatives have done and what Russia has intelligence has decided is that this is a new form of warfare. How do we sow chaos and influence decision-making? And that's what you see happening and what has happened over the last couple of years in this country. You know, how they were able to latch on to social media, Twitter, Facebook, and other forms of social media, and then inject false narratives into this social media.
Well, you talk about, interestingly, you talk about the idea that you know, the Russians are in part, in recent years, just recruiting unwitting Americans on social media, right? As not necessarily even, seeding this stuff on social media themselves to stir up the age-old Russian game of basically chaos in American politics, but actually sort of recruiting unwitting American users to spread this stuff on social media, which is part of this whole conversation.
That's right. And it's hard for Americans to figure out, well, what is real and what is not. Now there are some websites that do it, and I talk about that in my book, that look for these Russian trolls who seem to operate, for example, after Parkland. They were injecting themselves into the gun control debate.
Right.
And so it is hard for Americans to realize this is happening, but it is so important. That's what I try to talk about in this book and raise awareness about. It is so important because if they can influence how Americans think, well, then of course they can influence how Americans vote. And that is at the heart of this book.
Yeah. So I actually want to go to a caller now, someone talking about all of this, and they have a question. Penny is calling from Green Lake, Wisconsin. Penny, thanks for calling On Point. What's your comment?
My comment is that our senator, Ron Johnson, as you probably know, just came back from Russia with the other only Republican senators.
Uh-huh.
And he was the one that seemed to really disagree with the other senators in saying that the election meddling was overblown, and it is not the greatest threat to our democracy. And, you know, I was just shocked at his comments, and I wondered what your guest's view was on that. And I was seriously thinking of calling Ron today, his office, and have him read your book.
Jeff, any response to that? It does sound like, or at least by my impression of reading your book, it's the entire book is in disagreement with the senator's suggestion, correct?
Yeah, and I appreciate the caller encouraging him to read the book, because I do think it is important, the information in this book. It's gathered from U.S. law enforcement, intelligence sources, and a lot of the information that I gathered was before this story became this political football. It is highly charged in this political atmosphere. But what I'm hoping is that people will take off their Republican hat, they will take off their Democratic hat, and just look at this issue of Russian interference as Americans. Just look at this issue of influencing events, decision-making, and how problematic it can be. And it's not just something affecting Americans. It is affecting Europeans as well, because it is widely established that the Russians have also tried to influence events in Europe as well. And so this is not an issue that Americans are dealing with solely. But it is so important, because going into the midterm elections, going into the 2020 presidential election, there can be no doubt in the eyes of Americans across this country that the election system is safe. And right now, nearly 2 years after 2016, there are state election officials who question whether the federal government is giving them all the information and the help that they need. And that, in my view, is a problem, especially for Americans right now who are questioning the validity of the results.
Yeah, and Jeff, there are a couple of important distinctions in your book, right? One of them is between collusion, which, while the Mueller investigation continues, is seemingly unresolved, and election interference, which seems to be fact, according to most people that you talk to in the book. And I want to turn now to Illinois and focus specifically on what happened there during the last election. Joining me now from Chicago is Matt Dietrich, a spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections. Russian hackers compromised his state's voter registration database in 2016. Matt, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ben.
So break it down for us. What, you know, remind us what happened in 2016 in Illinois.
In 2016, on July 13th, our electronic voter registration database, one of our IT workers noticed that all of a sudden usage had spiked to 100%. The server, the system slowed down to a crawl, and when he looked into what was going on, they found out that there had been a breach, and a hacker had gotten into our voter registration database. And when we looked back on it, we found out that they had been there for about 2.5 weeks. So they had gotten in around June 23rd, and it was discovered on July 13th. Immediately, the system was shut down. We notified the Illinois Attorney General, who then notified the FBI and brought in the Department of Homeland Security. Eventually, the breach, they figured out the problem very quickly, closed it, took the system offline, brought in the federal authorities. Ultimately, we ended up notifying 76,000 voters that their data may have been viewed, and we set up a special hotline with the Illinois Attorney General in case any of those voters experienced problems related to it, like identity theft. No one ever did. But anyway, that's kind of the in a nutshell version, and Jeff goes into this in his book as well.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things to me about this, Matt, is I have a recent past as a tech reporter and cybersecurity reporter, and one of the things that I think gets lost in the wash sometimes here is people think about voting systems being hacked, essentially changing tallies, which
right.
is not something that doesn't necessarily happen or isn't necessarily a concern, but this is a whole different thing, right? We're talking about social hacking in a way, getting data on users and voters in the U.S. And then at least in this case, Jeff, I imagine using some of that data to sway votes or to just stir up chaos, right?
Well, and this is one of the messages that I've had to try to get across, because I get calls just from the general public as well, and I fielded lots of calls as the election season began from national media who are kind of doing their what are we doing for cybersecurity stories. But the question that I often get is, we hear that the voting systems in Illinois are vulnerable, or that the voting system was hacked by the Russians. And I always find myself explaining, listen, we had a data breach. That was our voter registration database. That's separate from what you do when you go into your polling place on election day. When we talk about cybersecurity, we are talking mainly about the voter registration end of things. There's plenty of chaos that can be caused if you breach a voter registration database and change names or remove names. That would result in voters showing up at the polling places and your election judges not having registered voters in their poll books. And that's going to cause long lines. It's going to make people aggravated, and it's going to erode confidence in our election system. So we are very vigilant about that, and we've made that our priority since 2016. Cybersecurity has been our number one priority. But it's important that people know that when we talk about Russian hacking, cybersecurity, we're not necessarily talking about them going to your polling place, stealing votes, throwing elections. Not that that couldn't happen. But
sure.
So,
yeah, that makes sense. And Jeff, you talk about this a little bit in the book as well. There's just this idea of essentially reducing confidence in the democratic process, right, Jeff?
That's right. And, it doesn't take much. And what Matt pointed out there, this confusion at the polls, the long lines, people getting frustrated and deciding not to vote. You know, in a way, it could be used to suppress vote. And there were concerns that that was happening. And I outlined this in my book, too. On election day or in the days leading up to election day, that there were efforts made by these Russian operatives to suppress the vote in certain areas.
Uh-huh.
And so there were concerns about that. But it only takes one little glitch in the system to cause this uncertainty about the going to the polls or the results at the polls. And that's why the system – as I examine in my book, it's so sensitive. And in fact, there were people in the Obama administration who were concerned once they realized what was going on, that all it would take was some patriotic Russian hacker on YouTube claiming to have altered a vote online for the system to be thrown into some sort of chaos. And so they were actually concerned about that potentially happening on election day, because it doesn't take much for the system to be affected.
Matt, Jeff was just talking about teeny tiny glitches, and I assume that right now you are headed into 2018 midterms in the heat of an intense tiny glitch hunt, mm-hmm. right? Can you talk about that? What is Illinois doing specifically to try to shore up systems?
We are in the midst of we got $13.1 million from the federal government in for election assistance funding, and we are required by our state legislature in our budget to spend at least half of that on creating what we're calling a Cyber Navigator program, which is a program of tech workers who will go to our individual election authorities, and in Illinois we have 108, and make sure that they are using best cybersecurity practices. We're also making an effort now to get all 108 election authorities in Illinois onto secure system, a secure network, so that they're not on any hackable internet connection. And you know, and the real challenge for this is we're talking about Russians, and DHS has said that Russians were behind the data breach that happened here in 2016. If the Russians or if some other bad actor was going to try to wreak havoc on the election system in Illinois, they probably go after the weakest link. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, which has a very large IT department of its own that a hacker would try to get to. It could be some very, very small county in far southern Illinois that maybe does not have its own IT department. All they have to do is get into one system to be able to claim that they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to guard against now.
Matt, quickly before we let you go, one of the big issues that Jeff brings up in his books and one of the moments that was sort of an aha moment for me was the description of tension between states at the federal coming between the states and the federal government when it came to in 2016 the federal government offering assistance and states rejecting that. Can you talk about that tension and whether it exists in Illinois?
Well, it didn't exist in Illinois. We are kind of an outlier because we were the only one that actually where they actually got through. And so we immediately called in the feds ourselves. So we had been working with the Department of Homeland Security ever since August of 2016. They started performing weekly hygiene scans on our system to make sure we didn't have another vulnerability in October of 2016. So we've been working with DHS ever since then. So we've never had an issue with them. In fact, we had an on-site risk assessment in May where DHS sent their people to our office in Springfield, in the Capitol, to really go over everything and make sure that we were secure and that we were employing best practices. So, you know, we weren't really part of that debate.
Sure. Matt Dietrich with the Illinois State Board of Elections. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Ben.
We are discussing Russia's campaign to undermine American democracy and institutions during the 2016 election. You can join the conversation. Do you live in one of the dozens of states where Russia penetrated voter registration rolls? Are you worried your information is compromised? I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Peter Sagal. Come try the only show that treats the news the way it deserves to be treated, roughly, with lots of tasteless comments. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We are talking about Russia's interference in the 2016 election. You can join the conversation. Will President Trump confront Putin about Russian meddling when they meet next week? What are you watching for at the Helsinki summit between the two leaders? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking to Jeff Pagaz, the Justice and Homeland Security correspondent for CBS News, who's out with a new book called Kompromat: How Russia Undermined American Democracy. And Jeff, one of the parts of your book that I really enjoyed reading the most was just describing a little bit more about President Putin of Russia. I mean, this is a guy who, at least, you know, in recent years, I've seen more on memes than have really learned that much information about, just silly internet memes. But this is a pretty interesting character, obviously.
He is. And you'll obviously learn more about him in the coming days as the president prepares to meet with him first privately, which some intelligence and law enforcement officials are likely concerned about. But then he'll meet in a larger group.
Mm-hmm.
But Putin is someone who is a hunter. He's a black belt in karate and judo, and he likes to intimidate people. And that's why this private meeting with the president is going to be interesting. And there will be reporters trying to figure out, well, what really happened in that meeting? Because as I point out in the book, he's had other meetings, Putin has, with other world leaders.
Sure.
For example, Angela Merkel, where he brought this giant, his giant black lab into this meeting with her. And he knew that she was terrified of dogs because she'd been bitten once, but he brought this big dog into this meeting with her clearly to send a message, clearly to get her off balance. And so he tries to intimidate. And again, that's why this private meeting with the president will be interesting.
And speaking to all this, I want to play some sound. At a rally in Montana last week, President Trump assured the crowd he will be ready for this upcoming summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I might even end up having a good relationship, but they're going, will President Trump be prepared? You know, President Putin is KGB and this and that. You know what? Putin's fine. He's fine. We're all fine. We're people. Will I be prepared? Totally prepared. I've been preparing for this stuff my whole life.
Jeff, you talk to a lot of security and national security sources in your book. What do you think of that President Trump statement? Are the people that you're talking to thinking that Putin is fine?
No, they don't think that Putin is fine. They view Putin as an adversary who has been very aggressive over the last several years, because what they see is a Russia that sees itself as resurgent. Putin, according to my intelligence sources, what he wants is for a weak United States. What he is trying to do is weaken Western alliances. And that's why U.S. law enforcement and intelligence sources that I speak with are troubled by President Trump's approach to our traditional Western allies, especially when you contrast that with the things that he says about Kim Jong-un or Vladimir Putin. And so U.S. law enforcement sources and intelligence sources, yeah, they are concerned about this and his approach to Russia. And they've been concerned about it since 2016, the summer of 2016. Putin is someone who served in the KGB for 17 years. And you don't serve in the KGB for that long without developing certain skills. The type of skills that he could use to intimidate President Trump, who is not accustomed to dealing with world leaders as he is accustomed to dealing with real estate executives in New York City or in other parts of the country or the world. This is different.
Yeah, and
the stakes are higher.
Well, and also interestingly, you know, there's been this question of what does Russia have or what might Russia have on the president? And this has been a sort of perennial narrative, at least in the last few years on this story. I want to go to a caller now. David is calling from Portland, Maine. David, thanks for coming on Point. What's your comment or question?
Cool. Thanks for having me. My question and comment kind of on what you just said, there's this narrative, which I believe that the Russians might have some sort of compromat on the president. But my question goes further is if the president is subject to compromat, what about members of Congress? I mean, how many other individuals could have this that we just don't know about?
David, thank you very much for your question. Jeff, what do you think? Is this something that some of your sources have been worried about or talking about?
Well, they have not raised the possibility that a member of Congress specifically is compromised in any way by Russian operatives. Some of the some of the congressional investigations have looked at other members of Congress and their ties to Russia. But, you know, what the president is facing and the questions that he is facing are certainly at a different level. And that's, you know, that's in part where the title of this book came from. I didn't want to focus too much on the investigation into whether there was any coordination between Russian operatives or the Trump campaign. But compromise, that's what that word means. It means being compromised, having information on someone that forces them to do something that might not that they might not ordinarily do. And that is what is at the heart of this special counsel investigation, and that is going to be in the atmosphere, if you will, when President Trump meets privately with Vladimir Putin. And that's why that type of private meeting raises a lot of questions for people. Why would you even put yourself in this situation where someone can't corroborate what you discuss with Vladimir Putin? In fact, that's happened before. Early on in the president's term, he had this meeting without a. I think there. You know, if memory serves, there were only a few people there, and I think it was during a dinner. And there were questions about what was said, and there was no record about what was said, and so there were concerns about that. And you're gonna likely have that again when he meets privately with President Putin. And again, it just raises these questions about compromise.
A couple of interesting things that we learned from the book, Jeff, is one that some of Putin's psychology, at least I took this from the book, it seems is sort of rooted in his working class family past, but also his front row seat as an agent to the crumbling of the USSR. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, he was there when the Soviet Union fell apart. He was working for the KGB, and he was involved in, you know, having to burn some of the KGB documents, shred those documents, destroy those documents before the post that he was in was lost. And that's not all. I mean, he is someone who remembers and reveres the Soviet Union as this powerful country. And he wants, according to the people that I've talked to, he wants to see Russia rise to that point again. And the only way for that to happen is for the U.S. to be weakened. And so that is the goal. But also, there is this issue of sanctions, and there has been a discussion about, well, whether some of the influence campaign here in the U.S. was to get a more sympathetic administration into office, because he knew that Hillary Clinton would not ease sanctions on Russia. So was the goal to get a more sympathetic administration into office to ease the sanctions? Because the people that I talked to say that Vladimir Putin hates these sanctions.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the driving goals as well.
It's really interesting you bring this up, because I want us to listen to some sound together again involving Clinton and this former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and this whole conversation. In 2009, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton presented Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov with a physical reset button to symbolize a new era of diplomacy between the United States and Russia.
I wanted to present you with a little gift which represents what President Obama and Vice President Biden and I have been saying, and that is, we want to reset our relationship.
And let's do it together.
So we will do it together, okay?
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome.
Jeff, it sounds like that reset button might have gotten thrown out.
It was smashed. It was shattered because, according to U.S. intelligence officials in this declassified report they unveiled in January of 2017, before President Trump took office, this essentially with Putin started as a grudge match.
Yeah.
He was angered by Hillary Clinton, thinking that she had fomented some sort of protest in Russia. And this was his way of striking back against her. So he was incensed by that. And in his view, the U.S. was meddling in their affairs. And so this was a grudge match, essentially, is how this all began. And this was the payback.
Jeff, I want to go to another caller and get you to respond to them, because this brings up another question that I don't think we've talked about just yet. I'd like to hear from William, who's calling from Peachtree City, Georgia. William, thanks for coming on Point. What is your question or comment?
Well, hi y'all from down here.
Hi.
I haven't heard any mention of the Steele dossier that was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, the Democratic campaign, where they colluded with Russian agents and British agents to come up with the Steele dossier that was used in justification to wiretap of President Trump's campaign. And I remember in 2016 when Trump accused the Obama administration of wiretapping the Trump Tower, there was ha, 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 ha. Anything about that from your guest?
Okay, well, let's talk about that. William, thank you very much for your call and for your comment. Jeff, any reaction to that? I think this represents still this debate about where some of this stuff actually comes from and whether it's legit.
Yeah, and I appreciate that question. William has a right to ask that question, because the Steele dossier is a factor in all of this. And what people also don't talk about is that dossier was delivered to James Comey by a Republican, John McCain, who delivered it. But the FBI already had it at that point. So that's one aspect of the Steele dossier. And some of the elements of the dossier are unsubstantiated to this day, but others have been confirmed. But I hope that William sees that in a separate bucket, or will try to see it in a separate bucket from Russian interference in the 2016 election. And that's what gets so confusing for people, is that they blend all of this together, the Steele dossier, whether there was collusion or coordination, and the Russian interference. Take the Russian interference separately, and as I said earlier, take your Republican hat off, your Democratic hat off,
right,
and just look at the fact that Russian operatives have been trying to influence what you read, what you see, what you hear. That is a problem for the democracy, and that is what my book mainly focuses on.
It really does, and it's it does a wonderful job of really painting a full picture. Just really quickly, Jeff, we've only got a minute or two left here. Putin summit next week. What are you going to be watching for specifically on Monday, briefly?
I want to see what the president can gain from that summit, whether he gains anything or whether this is a win for Vladimir Putin. And I also, as I discussed earlier, I want to see what happens in that one-on-one meeting, what comes out of that, whether we know exactly what comes out of that, because I think there will be mystery around that meeting, and that, you know, that is not a good thing for this White House. But reporters will be asking, what did you talk about? What was established?
Jeff, if there's one big takeaway from your book for readers and one reason to read the book, what would it be?
You know, the reason why I did the book, set out on this long journey with this very complicated story, is that I wanted people to see how fragile this democracy is, and especially if you take it for granted. We all have a right to vote in this country, and we all should believe that the vote that we cast is accurate, that no one is trying to influence or suppress who can vote, when they can vote. And that's what this book is about, and I hope that people come away thinking about that and encouraging their politicians, the people who represent them, whether Republican or Democrat, to focus on this. The DHS has been trying to work with state election officials, but it took a while to get started on that. And still to this day, nearly 2 years after 2016, some state election officials have questions about federal response and whether they have all the information they need to protect these election systems.
Jeff Pagay is Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent for CBS News and author of the new book, Kompromat: How Russia Undermined American Democracy. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Ben.
You can continue the conversation and get On Point Podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. By the way, if you want to reach me on Twitter, I am at The Brock Johnson. You should also check out the podcast I make about the website Reddit called Endless Thread. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.